Today is Friday, December 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, with the U.S. House of Representatives formally moving ahead with plans to drop articles of impeachment against U.S. President Donald Trump, the American public remains divided.
He's guilty. He should be out.
I am against the impeachment. I think it's ridiculous.
Plus, we have a preview of Monday's talks between Russia and Ukraine, aimed at ending the five-year conflict. Those stories and more are all coming up next. The U.S. Navy is confirming an active shooter and at least three other people are dead after gunfire at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola, Florida. The Sheriff's Department said that at least seven people were injured, including two sheriff's deputies, while the base remained on lockdown amid a huge law enforcement response. Today's shooting comes after a U.S. sailor whose submarine was docked at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii opened fire on three civilian employees Wednesday, killing two and then taking his own life just days before dignitaries and veterans descend on the base for the 78th anniversary of the Japanese attack. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made it official on Thursday that Democrats in the House of Representatives will begin drafting articles of impeachment with the goal of removing U.S. President Donald Trump from office. That would make Trump the fourth U.S. president in history to face formal impeachment charges in the House. As the impeachment battle intensifies, both sides are keeping a close watch on public opinion polls. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has that part of the story.
House Speaker Pelosi made the historic announcement at the Capitol.
With allegiance to our founders and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment.
The House Committee on the Judiciary will come to order.
The move comes after weeks of House hearings on allegations that the president abused his power by pressuring Ukraine to announce an investigation into political rival Joe Biden, the leading Democratic presidential contender.
Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit.
Republicans remain loyal defenders of the president, including House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
This is the day the nation is weaker, because they surely cannot put their animosity or their fear of losing an election in the future in front of all the other things that the American people want.
Trump has returned from the NATO summit, where he kept up his attacks on the impeachment effort.
The impeachment hoax is going nowhere. The Republican Party has never been so unified as it is right now. I have never seen anything like it.
Public support for Trump's impeachment and removal from office has grown since the probe began in September and remains at about 50%. Overall, the country remains split on whether to remove the president from office, with passionate views on both sides.
He's guilty. He should be out. He should have been impeached a long time ago for everything else he did.
I am against the impeachment. I think it's ridiculous. I think they've been going after Trump ever since before he got inaugurated.
Can you remark?
Analysts note that the recent weeks of public hearings have done little to shift public opinion, including Vanderbilt University expert Thomas Schwartz.
What I have observed is that there's no real detectable change in the public opinion polls as to the president's favorability or his job approval. And so it doesn't seem to have, as the cliche goes, moved the needle at all on his overall standing.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
In 1974, then-President Richard Nixon resigned from office after many Republicans deserted him over the Watergate scandal. But given the deep-seated political polarization in the U.S. today, building a bipartisan consensus is difficult, says Susan Lowe Block.
Well, it's definitely a very polarized age. And the other thing that's different from Nixon is we have polarized networks. So we have, not everyone believes the same facts. The public is divided as to facts, and that's a very serious problem.
Democrats are moving to hold an impeachment vote in the House by the end of the year. That would lead to a trial in the Republican-held Senate, where a two-thirds majority vote is required for removal from office, a prospect analysts find unlikely at the moment. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
The death toll from a migrant boat capsizing off Mauritania has risen to 63 after the Coast Guard found five more bodies. It was one of the deadliest disasters this year among Africans trying to reach Europe. Search and rescue operations are continuing, and at least 83 survivors swam through rough seas to shore after the boat capsized Wednesday. Some 150 migrants, including children, had been on the boat for about a week. The United Nations Human Rights Chief said Iranian security forces were shooting to kill in their deadly crackdown against protesters in recent weeks, according to credible video footage. The unrest left at least 208 people dead nationwide, according to the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, and Amnesty International. The United States State Department says that Iran may have also killed at least 1,000 people in recent protests altogether. Iran disputes the death toll figures. Bachelet said footage received by her office appears to show demonstrators were gunned down while running away or being shot directly in the face and vital organs, and such actions amounted to serious violations of human rights. Police on Friday fatally shot four men being held on suspicion of raping and killing a woman in southern India after investigators took them to the crime scene to locate evidence, drawing both praise and condemnation in a case that has sparked protests across the country. The local police commissioner said the suspect seized some weapons from policemen who had taken them there and started firing. The woman's death is the latest gruesome case of sexual violence against women to rile India and comes despite efforts to strengthen the penalties for such crimes. One of France's biggest demonstrations in recent history continued Friday, with unions vowing to protest until the government backs down on planned pension reforms. Lisa Bryant has those details.
Armand Perrault-Logat pour l'info. Bonjour Armand.
Bonjour.
Et à la une donc ces précisions de Jean.
Metro, rail and air service were severely disrupted again Friday as France marked its second day of nationwide protests against a planned overhaul of the pension system. On Thursday, more than 800,000 people took to the streets across the country in a mass show of anger. Their numbers were more than double those of last year's yellow vests at their peak, although that protest movement hopes to revive on the back of this current discontent. Many of the current demonstrations have been peaceful, but in Paris, some were marked by clashes between police and so-called black bloc anarchists. The strike also shuttered schools and many tourist attractions. Pension reform is an explosive issue here. President Emmanuel Macron wants to standardize and simplify the current system, comprised of myriad plans, retirement ages, and benefits. The last major reform effort in 1995 triggered 3 weeks of paralyzing strikes, with the government backing off on the most ambitious changes.
Aujourd'hui, l'espérance de vie pour les hommes, c'est de l'ordre de 83 ans.
With people living much longer and a chunk of working-age French unemployed, analyst Jean Petou of Sciences Po Bordeaux University says France's pension system faces serious financial strains. He says it remains to be seen whether the government's method will work.
On sait que même réussi une journée ne suffit pas.
Yves Verrière, general secretary of the Force Ouvrière Union, told French Radio, it was important the mobilization continues. But his and other unions are also opting for the traditional path of negotiations with the government.
Rappelons notre attachement au respect du droit de grève, au respect du droit de manifester. Ce sont
French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe says people have the right to strike, but those who want to work should be allowed to do so. Unions have announced another strike next Tuesday. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Austrian and Moldovan authorities have broken up an organized crime ring suspected of smuggling nuclear materials, that according to the European Police Agency. Europol, which coordinated and supported the operation, said the ring was attempting to sell radiological material to an army for about $3.3 million. The leaders of Russia and Ukraine hold their first face-to-face talks next week in Paris on Monday, December 9th, as part of a European summit aimed at ending the five-year war between Ukraine's government forces and pro-Russian rebels in East Ukraine. From Moscow, Charles Maines joins us with a look ahead. Charles, what can you tell us about this upcoming discussion between Russia and Ukraine, scheduled for Monday to try and curb this five-year conflict?
Right. Well, this is interesting. It's the first time that Russian President Vladimir Putin will meet with Ukrainian leader, the new Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky. This will be their first face-to-face talks, first meetings in Paris next week as part of this European-hosted summit. Of course, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, will be playing host, but also we'll have Angela Merkel there as well, all part of this quartet of nations that have been trying to solve this five-year war between Ukrainian government forces and pro-Russian rebels in East Ukraine, unsuccessfully so far.
What are the expectations for this? Because, this has been going on for 5 years following the Russian annexation of Crimea, the expulsion of Russia from the G8, which is now the G7. So what are people really looking for as a result from this first meeting?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, at this point, you could say, in advance, it would seem as though these two sides, Russia and Ukraine, are coming in with such different perspectives on this that there's no chance for a peace deal. And that's probably the case. I think most people here feel that these entrenched differences mean that Russia and Ukraine, they might come up with some more trust-building measures, but this idea of a grand bargain is probably pretty far off. But at the same time, we have this new interesting figure in Volodymyr Zelensky, the new Ukrainian leader. He is an actor by training, a comedic actor. He ran and won for the presidency in a landslide in the spring, basically promising to end the war in East Ukraine, to bring peace. And so that's led to some kind of maneuvers we've seen in recent months. Back in September, we saw a mass prisoner exchange between Russia and Ukraine. That was the first time that had been long sought by the previous president, Petro Poroshenko of Ukraine, but was unable to accomplish that. So Zelensky delivered on that. We saw Russia return three naval ships in November, just last month. Now that was seemingly another gesture ahead of these talks, but it was somewhat spoiled after Kiev accused Moscow of essentially stripping parts from the boats and, ruining the toilets and things like that. So there's a bit of acrimony over there. But just generally speaking, it's interesting. You've seen how the Russian public is responding to Zelensky because he's someone they know. There's someone they've seen on comedic programs aired in Russia. He's a funny guy. He's likable. And he's also, importantly, a native Russian speaker. He grew up speaking Russian in his home. So he's someone that they can identify with, and they certainly see a kind of shift in polls here, saying that they view Ukraine more positively, despite what has been several years now of really aggressive Russian propaganda over state media in particular that paint Ukraine and the attempts by Ukraine to sort of shift west as part of a fascist revolution. So Zelensky has really shifted a lot of things up here, and that's the really interesting part of this.
Now, you mentioned that there has been that Russian propaganda there, that this has been going on for 5 years, that, the idea of a grand bargain to end things completely is probably too much to expect from this. So, this is the first meeting. What kind of next steps are both sides signaling they would like to, implement?
Well, in theory, right. So in theory, the grand bargain, if it was to occur, really amounts over what happens with these independent republics, these so-called independent republics. Nobody actually recognizes them. This is the Donetsk People's Republic and Luhansk People's Republic. These are these two territories that were carved out by these pro-Russian rebels in the past several years. They say they want to join Russia, but actually Moscow has not a lot of interest in taking them in for various reasons, including that they'd have to rebuild them. So at this point, that seems to be the issue that gets debated here. Russia is pushing for more autonomy for them. Kiev wants to reassert control. There have been these previous negotiations that, again, were involving France and Germany, which pushed for a series of measures that would allow them to move towards some kind of compromise. Nobody seems to be implementing them at this point. So you might see some kind of re-upping or kind of an upgrade of what's called the Minsk Protocols. These are the Minsk Peace Accords that were negotiated back in 2015 and, again, have been unsuccessful so far. But beyond that, you might see some other smaller steps, again, trust-building measures between Putin and Zelensky, Something like, for example, another prisoner swap. That's something that's widely discussed here. Zelensky says he wants it. Putin certainly has given signals that he's up for that. Another issue that may come up as well is the deliverance of Russian gas through Ukraine into Europe. That's another issue. Their current contract, which is a 10-year contract, Ukraine is a transit country for Russian gas into Europe. It's coming up at the end of December. And so there is a ways that they might actually, get some kind of deal on that, which is just another thing that would just kind of build a little bit more trust. It's more complicated, however, by the fact that Germany is supporting another pipeline from Russia around Ukraine, which has been, of course, an unstable point of entry because of these conflicts between Kiev and Moscow. So that might make things a little bit more murkier as these negotiations go on.
Charles Maines reports out of Moscow. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve.
And you're listening to VOA News.
Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink without
the CD features Billie Eilish's Bad Guy.
So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type.
Lil Nas X, Old Town Road.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride.
And many of the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. NATO officials insist good progress was made this week at the meeting in London to mark the alliance's 70th anniversary as leaders reaffirmed their commitment to collective self-defense against any Russian aggression. But the summit is likely to be remembered for the fractious relations between the leaders, including an embarrassing hot mic moment for Canada's Prime Minister. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and other world leaders were apparently caught on microphone laughing at US President Donald Trump. Trudeau denied he was mocking the president.
The relationship between Canada and the United States is extremely strong, and I have a very good relationship with President Trump and his team.
Trump's response.
Well, he's two-faced.
The incident appeared to sour the mood. Trump abandoned a scheduled press conference Wednesday afternoon and left the summit. French President Emmanuel Macron stood by his earlier warning that NATO was brain dead. NATO officials insist progress was made. The 29 NATO leaders reaffirmed their commitment to joint self-defense and agreed that Russia's actions constitute a threat to Euro-Atlantic security, the strongest warning yet. Turkey was persuaded not to block updated plans on defending Eastern European states. Ankara had previously demanded that NATO allies declare Kurdish fighters in Syria terrorists as a condition for its support. NATO taking on new challenges such as cyber warfare and disinformation. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson hinted that he may follow the US lead in banning the Chinese telecom firm Huawei.
We cannot prejudice our vital national security interests, nor can we prejudice our ability to cooperate with other Five Eyes security partners. And that will be the key criterion that informs our decision about Huawei.
Five Eyes is an intelligence alliance that includes Britain, the US, Australia, Canada and New Zealand. Defence analyst Bobby Ghosh says NATO should be careful not to overreach.
Not all problems can be solved by NATO, and nor should NATO be deployed against all problems just because it already exists and it has a high degree of cohesion.
After the diplomatic turbulence in London, US President Donald Trump flew back to Washington to face a growing domestic political storm as Democratic Party lawmakers issued a report calling for his impeachment. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Hong Kong's police chief has urged citizens to demonstrate peacefully ahead of an expected large turnout on Sunday for a pro-democracy march. Organizers said the march is aimed to show the movement retains strong momentum. Police have given a rare green light to the demonstration organized by the Civil Human Rights Front, the group that called for the largely peaceful million-strong marches this past summer. Now, to learn more about this upcoming march, I spoke with Hong Kong-based journalist Justin Solomon. Justin, what can you tell us about the protests that are planned for this weekend that have essentially been greenlit by the Hong Kong administration to be allowed to take place?
There are a handful of protests this weekend. However, the one that everyone is keeping their eyes on is the one that's organized by the Civil Human Rights Front. Now, that is an organization that has organized some of the biggest marches that we've seen in the 6 months of protest, and we're talking about the 2 to 3 million person marches that they have organized. So this is the first march that they have actually had approved by the police since August. So it's a big deal, one, that it was approved, and two, it's a big deal because we haven't seen really large gatherings in the last few weeks, and the momentum some people have thought slowed down a bit, but this weekend, we'll certainly keep an eye on it because I have a feeling those numbers could potentially be huge once again.
What's the mood like in Hong Kong? Because you had this local election where pro-democracy candidates really took the majority of the seats in the district leadership there. And then you had the siege at Hong Kong Polytechnic University. Those two events have gone into the past. And now we have this planned march on the weekend. And as you said, it's by the organization who has, you know, successfully brought up millions of people. But what are people, you know, in Hong Kong experiencing leading up to this?
You know, it's a complicated question with probably an even more complicated answer. I think expats that live in Hong Kong, and we know there are lots of them, may side with the protesters, but they want their life to go on. So in a way, they were happy when things were quieter over the last few weeks. I think a lot of locals still support these protesters, still support the protests, and they will be out with this organization by the hundreds of thousands making their way through Hong Kong Island. Now, as part of this march, the organizers did have to agree with a few stipulations from the police in order to get it green-lit, if you will.
So what are the stipulations that they've had to agree to?
Sure. Well, they went back a few times, and the front, the Civil Human Rights Front, has agreed to have 200 of their own marshals, if you will, on hand, who will serve as the frontline communicators with the police should the march be larger than they expect, which right now they're putting that estimate at 32,000 people. Should that march be bigger, these marshals will be the ones to communicate with the police, saying we need an extra lane of traffic closed off, we have too many people. And should the police think things are getting out of line, the police have said they will go to these marshals and say, you need to tell your marchers, your ralliers, that they need to do X, Y, and Z, or we will withdraw the right for you to march and say this ends now.
Justin Solomon is a reporter based out of Hong Kong. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Swedish environmental activist Greta Thunberg pulled into the Madrid city on the overnight train Friday, heading to the gathering of world leaders she says are failing to combat climate change. The AP's Charles de la Desma explains.
The Spanish capital is hosting sponsored talks aimed at streamlining the rules on global carbon markets and agreeing on how poor countries should be compensated for climate destruction. But first, activist Greta Thunberg joins thousands of other young people in a march to demand world leaders take real steps to halt climate change. Her presence is expected to shift the attention to demands for greater action by non-governmental organisations and a whole new generation of environment-minded activists. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Dan Brown, engineer Cornelius Tenner, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you very much for joining us. You'll be able to find coverage of world events and news as it happens on the VOA News website. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you anytime, day or night. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great weekend.